Okay, it is Memorial Day and I am interviewing Walt Parker. And we are proceeding as though we're not going to have any problems at all. So there. Okay.
Okay.
I'll just try to keep your coffee out of this whole deal.
Move it over here.
Okay. So, Walt, I know that you are, that your experience with this whole Exxon Valdez thing goes back a mile and a half. So, to keep things simple, I want you to tell me how you heard about the oil spill and what you did immediately as a result of that.
Okay. Well, my colleague on the TAPS pipeline, Chuck Champion, and I were having breakfast down at the hotel at the corner of 36th and Seward Highway. Mm-hmm. And he told me about it. Our breakfast was at 8 o'clock, and that was when I first learned about it. I never turn on the radio or the TV in the morning, so I heard about it and came home. Called my old friend Steve Cooper and said, "What can I do for you?" And things went on from there.
In what direction did they go?
Well, the legislature was obviously enthralled with it, and getting the legislation through to establish the oil spill commission went pretty quickly, and Steve appointed the six of us very quickly, and so we were ready to go pretty much hit the ground running by May, which is moving fast for a legislative mandate. And so they got together and elected me chairman, and had a very good group on there. Esther Wernicke, Esther and I had been together on a lot of things, and Meg from DNR, and my old friend from Seattle, and the guy from San Francisco, and Tim Wallace from Fairbanks. And four Alaskans and the two from outside, and that was it. We sat down and started having hearings.
Did you go to the site?
Did we go to the site?
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't go to the site as a commission. I'd been there and by there many times when we were opening up Valdez, so we flew over a lot of beaches and what have you on our way to and from hearings. We'd usually take a look at what was going on with the cleanup. We were too busy having hearings to take part in the cleanup.
So the hearings were held primarily where?
Everywhere. We had hearings in Valdez, Cordova, Petit Lake, Chenega, Seward, Homer. We went to Seldovia, Kenai, Kodiak. We didn't have hearings in any of the Kodiak Island villages, but they had a good turnout in Kodiak for them. And so then we had hearings in Anchorage to bring in the feds and state agencies and the industry. We had subpoena powers, so we had a good turnout.
You got what power?
Subpoena powers.
Oh, okay.
that was the big coup, and I didn't even ask for them. The legislature, since they had long experience with the oil industry by that time, just threw them in.
I'm really I think one of the reasons they chose me for this project was because I have to ask the obvious questions. Mm-hmm. I don't know too much about it, but Why is it that that subpoena power was so important? Do you mean to say that the oil execs, without having been subpoenaed, wouldn't have been?
If they had known we had the subpoena power, they would have been much more difficult to get them to show up.
I see.
As it was when I had all the tanker captains before me here in Anchorage, why all seven of them all seven companies that had tankers operating in Valdez were there. And a very mixed crew they were, too.
How's that?
Oh, you know, I knew already going in that the oil industry is keeps a lot of secrets from each other, mm-hmm. and only pays, and especially in those years, pays minimal attention to how the others do things. But when the tanker captains came in, boy, that made it very clear, and it's all in our report, because we had the people who were saying perfectly okay to run a big tanker with a crew of nine if you had it totally automated, and at the other end of the string we had people with crews of 29 and automation also. So, as an old automator, why, I knew that my biggest job was teaching people that if you automate, you have to hire more people to run the automation.
Tell me about the hearings. What's the most prominent thing about the hearings that's interesting?
The most prominent thing was getting out some of the story I already knew, but getting out from the agencies, federal and state, how much they had completely disregarded oversight of the shipping from Valdez after the state lost the Chevron versus Hammond lawsuit. When we went in the 3 years, 77, 78, 79, after Valdez was open, we were operating under a state law, which Chancy Croft had been instrumental in passing, in which my long-term staffer, Dennis Dooley, had worked with him closely on back in 76, getting ready for Valdez opening. And this was a real carrot and a stick law. If your tankers met the standards laid out in the law, double hulls, the right size crews, the right trained crews, etc., you didn't have to pay as much money into the state fund, state coastal management fund. And that was what we got sued on, and we got sued on federal preemption, that we were taking over jobs that were given to the Coast Guard. And they did a lousy job, the AG did a lousy job on defending the state's point on that. And so we lost the lawsuit in 79. And at that time, the oil had been busy buying the legislature, as they were doing it then, as they still are. And the legislature was becoming more and more Republican and less inclined to take on the oil. So it was a very different crew from what I had been used to. And the other thing that came out very strongly was as soon as they won the lawsuit, the oil industry dumped every last vestige of trying to do the right job on oil spill response. They'd before, in order to meet state standards, they'd had a separate crew which did nothing but oil spill response, as they do now with SERVs. And SERVs is the acronym for the Alyeska's Oil Spill Response Organization that operates out of Valdez. And they completely dumped all that. And that was, of course, why, and didn't try to maintain the equipment or anything, which is why all the recovery equipment was buried under several feet of snow when the Exxon Valdez hit the reef. So it was Dan Long and Ricky Ott, and to a certain degree, Stan Stevens have been trying to tell everybody this for 10 years almost. And completely ignored, you know. And Dan, of course, can bring out his files of file after file of letters written to his bosses, and he would take chances and slip the word to the legislature and everything. No response whatsoever. So, after Exxon Valdez, it was after what we did at the Oil Spill Commission, in addition to interviewing everybody, we put that record down in 1,300 pages, and which gave Congress the ammunition it needed to pass the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, OPA 90. And so that was a big thing, that how much the people who lived on the spot had been ignored, and how much after we lost the lawsuit, the system just went to hell. Because we knew all this. I had very good consultants when we put the 76 Act together, besides Dennis, to work with the Chancy on that. And, you know, we knew what the weak spots were in the oil shipping industry, and we were promoting double hulls at the time, and had been. In 76, we've been promoting them for, some of us, for 6 years. And it just was one of the many things that needed to be done. But and mostly spending money on training and making sure that you had adequate crew. So all these fixes we got into OPA 90, and now sitting on the board of the Prince William Sound RCAC, I see things slipping again. Still very good at Valdez, but I'm slipping worldwide. And the Europeans just had a couple of big ones, the Prestige and the Eureka. They had two big spills in the last couple of years, and they beefed their system up dramatically, so we may be on our way back. But over half the world fleet are flag of convenience carriers who don't report to anybody. That per term, flag of convenience, you know what that means?
No.
Flag of convenience is a small country who will let your ship fly your flag, and you enroll their ship in a corporation in their country, and they get the income from that, and there you go on and do as you please.
Huh.
So enforcing against the flag of convenience is much more difficult than enforcing against the ships of a major state, with some exceptions. They have a big fight going on now in the Aleutians with the Shipping Safety Partnership, trying to recover things after the Sullivan IU incident, and other than the Cougar Ace incident and all the other things that have gone on out there with Asian-based shipping.
How do you think the Exxon Valdez oil spill changed Alaska?
Initially, it changed it a great deal in the oil spill region. Of course, more people were keeping an eye on what the industry was doing. And that still carries over a certain degree, even though it's now been 18 years. And that's a long time, even for an old man like me. And so people are paying more attention. But it's had, as recent events indicate, almost zero effect on state oversight. Anything that's come about has been because of two citizens groups that were formed, Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet, have weighed in there and got enough attention from the press to put a little pressure on, that the state would have retreated totally during the Murkowski years and during the Knowles years. Hickel kept the pressure on until Knowles took over, but first thing that Tony did, showed up in June of the briefing on what the commission that was formed, state commission that was formed after the oil spill commission to do all response conditions and keep things going. That was canceled immediately by the Knowles administration, and nothing replaced it. And, you know, there's to keep DEC and the other agencies really working hard. So, as you can tell, I'm not a big Tony fancier, so despite being a much more liberal Democrat than he is, why?
I know, I'm the same way. I'm mystified by him doing that.
Yeah.
And angry.
Yeah. And in Anchorage, it made some difference. The press paid more attention and still does, I think. That's because they hear from people on the citizens' bodies pretty frequently, and then about the time everybody's feeling comfortable in the industry, why they spill another one, like the North Slope thing has got everybody going again. And unfortunately, that was one of the things we really lost on. We made a real effort, all my old friends, Feinberg, Lon, Stevens, Ricky, etc., the whole gang, including Alaskan 80 groups, made a real effort that to have a citizens oversight group on when the pipeline was renewed for the pipeline. See, Valdez has, Prince William Sound has no real authority over the pipeline, only the terminal and the ships. So we made a massive effort on that, trips up north, did a lot of traveling to keep on, and got zero response from Gail Norton. Not a thing that she asked for from the industry on the pipeline renewal.
Remind me, Gail Norton is?
Secretary of Interior.
Oh, yes, of course.
Gone now. Her replacement's not much as I can see either, but anyway, if you're a Republican, you have to be pretty good to get money.
I'm no Republican.
Anyway, so we got nothing. And immediately, of course, almost immediately, YBP started spilling oil. And they've been told for years, we'd all told them, I've been telling them since the early 90s, those pipes are getting old, buddy. Look at your history. You know, those pipes have been running oil, you know, for 20 years almost. And I was part of the design team, and when I signed off on them, I was signing off on 20-year pipes, so stated. Well, and that's because the state at Prudhoe Bay, for almost ever since Prudhoe Bay was opened, has put about a half a man year in DEC and a lot less than that in DNR on the site up there. Out of sight, out of mind. And about a half a man year on the pipeline, too. And the guy who's had it, Ed Meggers, has had the job a long time and worked his head off, but one person can only do so much, especially when he doesn't have any real technical staff or anything to back him up.
Ed
Meggers.
Could you spell, what's his last name spelled?
Yay. I may look in my book and see what it's like. That down for him.
Okay. I can probably find that out. We don't need to go running
all over the place.
Mm-hmm. got M-E-G-G-E-R-T.
You said his first name was Ed?
Yeah.
Okay. M-E-G-G-E-R-T, Meegert.
Yeah, phone number I got for him is Fairbanks, 451-2124.
Okay.
That's a pretty old number.
That's okay. That's my lesser than tape recorder. This is the one that can hit the deck, and I won't have to hit you.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, I might have to hit you. Even though we would be kind of equal after I check out your trees.
Yeah. Was him and Dan Long, you know, all by himself in Valdez. At the other end, we're pretty much it from DEC. And one of the big things, my old buddy Denny Kelso, who I like and who's now working for, I think, the Hewlett-Packard Foundation, has followed a very green career. Denny was commissioner of DEC when, that's Hera. She says, it's so great not having dogs in the house. Anyway, Denny was commissioner of DEC, so I said, how many times have you, and he'd been commissioner by the time he got before me for 3 years. I said, how many times were you in Valdez before the Exxon Valdez? Oh, I'd never been to Valdez. I was completely flabbergasted. Completely. That's what I mean. That was one of the many interviews that led us to the conclusion that everybody just forgot about it.
Yeah.
Complacency, the two things that lead to disasters, both in aviation, automobiles, tankers, everything. I think complacency is number one, and number two is probably lack of training. You know, we've been patting the shippers on the back at Valdez for a long time now because they've been doing, relatively speaking, a very good job. And you've got to keep after them. And the staff down there works hard. They go to all the meetings with the shippers and everything, and we have the shippers in to meet with us at least twice a year. So the dialogue is there, but whether it's, and we've got the new ships, except for Exxon.
By that you mean double hulls.
The new double hulled, double power plants.
Right.
Everything. You know, as
double
good as ships as can be built.
Yeah.
Except you got to be careful because BP's anchors broke off in a storm the other day, and that was, they were cast in China, and it was just a lousy casting job. So the anchors just broke loose from the ship and fell off. So they, not the chain, the anchors themselves broke.
Yeah.
The, so that, but Exxon has bought all the old ships from the other shippers and is using them. And they claim to have double bottom, double hulls. Well, those were the ships that were laid down in 76 and were built in response to the original state act that I referred to earlier. And those ships are getting 30 years old now. A little over 30.
So, as you know, Walt, in this story, you have editorial power, so I could ask you a question that's kind of dicey. Why is Exxon, is it just all about money with them?
It's not totally about money. From my dealings with them now, for almost 40 years, it's arrogance as much as anything. Arrogance in Houston, you can have nice people working in the region who are very reasonable. As soon as it gets to Houston, it's no. It's my way or the highway, to use an old Tony Nose phrase.
Yeah, that sounds like our federal government, doesn't it?
Yeah, worse than the federal government. The federal government, you got Congress to go to, but going to Congress for Exxon doesn't help a damn bit. People really start digging into our present situation in the Middle East, why they'll find the major oil companies' long tracks there. Why did Tony Blair back George W. Bush up in Iraq too? Because BP and Shell had big interests in getting at Iraqi oil on the best possible terms. That's why. And I like Tony Blair, but who's he think he's kidding? Why did we go into Iraq too? To make sure that our oil companies would get the best possible deal. And nobody was counting on Iraqis defending their home turf. Even after the army was gone, you know. And Congress has not done a good job of investigating on this. The President's Committee did a pretty good job, Baker and those guys, but I'm getting off the title. Off a little bit here, but it all involves oil. But Congress should have had hired a really first-rate investigating team of the best we have in the Middle East, which is not that great. I haven't spent so much time in the Middle East since 2000, so I used to hang around in Israel and Jordan and Iraq. Never liked Saudi and the Emirates enough to know what was going on. And, now we've got a fantastic scene that's being fueled by $60 oil in the Emirates. They now bill themselves as the garden spot of the universe and will until. They don't do as the terrorists tell them to. Get one of their big new hotels blown up or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty pretty shabby. Pretty shabby state of the world, I have to admit.
Alaska was at its strongest when we had strong working relationships with the other coast, West Coast states, which I'm trying to rebuild through the Shipping Safety Partnership and others, to really work with them, because we all have similar problems with the oil. And so now we have four women senators who are proven very strong on this, and a woman House leader who's proven very strong and standing up against the corporations. So with a Democratic Congress, why, that's the one tool we've got now that we have to maximize our use on, and which means we have to work through the NGO groups in D.C. because the state's not going to do us any good. As good as Sarah Palin is, and she is very good, why, there's no way she can have the state's office weigh in heavy on this one with the West Coast states. When I had Hammond backing me, well, it was easy. I spent the state money running down there and lining up governors and had Dooley on the job while half of his time lining up, you know, the other states and what have you. Now, I don't know, Sarah may. I just don't know her crew well enough to any of them. They're all strangers to me because they're too young and haven't been involved in all this stuff through the years.
Yeah. Why do you suppose it is that you're getting so much cooperation from women in particular?
From where?
From women in particular. You mentioned
I think that women since treat the dominance of corporations the way they used to really treat the dominance of men, and regarded the corporations as the same kind of target.
Mm-hmm. And when you say corporations, tell me which corporations you mean.
Well, I mean everyone that has a big international presence, so that includes all the big oil companies and includes companies like Walmart. I'm not sure Costco has the same kind of international presence as Walmart. It includes Microsoft and HP and all of the guys, everybody who has to, you know, deal with a bunch of countries. You know, Exxon's a presence in probably more than 30 countries, maybe a lot more than 30 now.
Exxon is the biggest?
Walmart was the biggest for a while as far as corporate size, and Exxon was number two, and I'm not sure where they fit now, but Exxon's one, two, or three. And now Gazprom in Russia is getting big and buying stations in the United States and Western Europe and what have you. And, and of course, Russian gas is being structured so they can turn the spigot off to Western Europe, which gets about 70% of its gas from Russia. Turn it off in a hurry. They got their gas. They had lots of gas from the North Sea for quite a while, but that's running out. They're going to be more dependent on Russia. It's Russia or LNG for them. Well, that's...
Who do you think was the biggest hero in the oil spill? Or the biggest heroes? What made the most difference?
What made the most difference was how fast you could move when you made up your mind and put the full power of the state of Alaska and the other states behind it to achieve a bill like HOPA 90. We met and had our first hearings in May and June of 89 at the Oil Spill Commission. We had our report out in the fall, and we had HOPA 90 by the next October. So it took us 16 months to get that major bill. And you know, without that kind of push, without the kind of staffing I had the funds to pull together, why, we'd never done it, you know. I had John Havelock as my lead attorney, and plenty of money to hire other attorneys. I had money to hire the best consultants, the guys who'd helped me put the 76 Act together, Virgil Keith and Joe Porcelli at ECO, to put them to work full time on it, pretty much. And I had Dooley back, who hadn't got sick on me yet. You might want to talk to Dennis, he's in town. And he's came down with he was only 50, he came down with whatchamacallit, one of the nerve diseases. And it's
Parkinson's?
Hmm?
Parkinson's?
No, one of the other ones. Begins with M, I think. You get into your 80s, your memory starts going. Yeah.
Wow.
My wife had rheumatoid arthritis for 25 years. You'd think I would be good on diseases, if nothing else.
Well,
anyway,
go ahead.
Anyway, and I had Marilyn Hyman, who just finished working for the legislature, and so had a lot of contacts there. On the state legislation, Drew Pierce did a great job in backing us up there, despite the fact that her future husband was on the other side. Thank God they weren't married yet. And, you know, the legislature pulled itself up by its bootstraps and realized they had to do something. So they passed effective state legislation, which is not being strongly implemented now. But Sarah's showing good signs of, you know, she's got that group working. For the first time, they've got a special state group working on the North Slope and what have you. If need be, I suspect she'd do the same thing for Valdez after the legislature's out. Well, they are out, but after she has a minute or two to come up with her air, I think I'll pull a couple of people together and we'll go talk about things to her and whoever from her staff she chooses to invite on board to where corrosion exists throughout the pipeline.
After.
If a tank breaks at Valdez, why, that'll do the job. But we don't want that to happen. We'd like to get there beforehand.
Yeah. Well, this, although this interview's been brief, I know I'm going to end up using 90% of everything you've said, which is going to be still three times long, as much material. So is there anything you want to say in closing?
No, I think we covered everything. Just remember, it took us over 20 years of hard work to get double hulls in the tankers. And if we're going to get the kind of improvements we want at Prudhoe Bay, and that the Valdez terminal and the pipeline in between them, if we are going to get the kind of changes we need there, we don't want it to take 20 years, because then the pipe will be, some of it will be 60 years old. And the feds have got a little bit of attention. But if we're going to get the necessary federal attention to this, and get the necessary money being spent on corrosion control as the principal item, and on pipeline oversight and what have you, the feds have really got to chime in with some bucks. The Joint Pipeline Office is too far down in the structure, and its leader is too far down in the structure to get the attention of the White House when he needs to. And one advantage I had was Steve Cooper was governor and did a very effective job of backing up the Oil Spill Commission. And we had a Democratic Congress, so George Mitchell, who was majority leader in the Senate, welcomed us on board and always found time for his staff to talk to my staff. My buddy Scoop Jackson was still with us and backing us to the hilt, because Scoop and I had flown together over a lot of this stuff and looked at it. So this old Scoop, he was kind of more of a hawk than I am, but he knew his way around things.
Excuse me, Kitty, but I have to do a couple things.
Miss Warren Magnuson, too.
I'll be right back. I'll be right back. Just stay here. No, I promise I'll come back. No, no, stay here. Right back. Okay, so I'm going to turn these off.